In the mid-17th century, the small country of Holland was a crowning testament to the empire of mankind. Its science, art, trade, and military prowess reaching never-before-seen heights during this golden age. The Dutch enjoyed wealth and power not just across Europe, but the widening world as a whole. In the small city of Delft, a wealthy draper and chamberlain takes the scenic route home from his office, enjoying the final glow of the late afternoon sun. He walks along the canals, glimpsing tiny fish and wriggling things darting between the lengthening shadows. Above his head, towering lime trees are filled with birdsong as these delicate creatures dart from branch to branch. Occasionally, one may drop to the ground to search among the wilting tulips for a worm or grub. The city is filled with life. The trees, flowers, birds, fish, and insects are pleasant, gilded trimmings to the rich fabric of Delft society. But the draper doesn't linger on the canal sides. He is eager to return home and to his true passion, his lenses. For this draper is Antony van Leeuwenhoek. And while his days are filled with bolts of cloth and sheaves of paperwork, his nights are his own. He fills them with perfectly curved shards of glass that allow him to peer into another world. A tiny lens of Leeuwenhoek's own making is sandwiched between plates of brass. He holds it up to his eye, bringing his face close to a droplet of water dispensed from a vialful retrieved from the canals that very afternoon. He is fascinated and mystified by what he sees. Intricate creatures, tiny specks busying themselves about their minute droplet world. They are as industrious and self-absorbed as Delft's own residents, but this is a watery city, writ small. Leeuwenhoek names these microscopic inhabitants animalcules. And his is probably the first human eye to knowingly witness them. In the years that follow, he will document and illustrate single-celled creatures we now know as protozoa. And then later, even smaller living things that we know as bacteria. He will take samples from ponds, puddles, and wells, and from the human mouth and intestine. And everywhere he looks, with the help of precious lenses, he will find life. Leeuwenhoek was one of the first people in the world to see the microcosmos, to realize its ubiquity and its staggering diversity. Today, some 350 years later, we know that microscopic life is all around us, even though it remains invisible to the unaided eye. Bacteria and microorganisms are on our bodies and inside them, helping us, harming us, or simply living among us. They permeate almost every natural environment, and have done since before the first humans, even before the first full-sized animals took center stage on the Earth. The pretty little animals that swim, wriggle, and flutter around Delft's canals may be attractive trimming to the fabric of life, but humans, for all their self-awareness and civilization, are merely part of that trimming too. Instead, Earth's microbes comprise the warp and weft of the biosphere, and scientists are still striving to understand our place among them. Just how exactly are we related to Leeuwenhoek's animalcules? How far back can we trace our origins? And what exactly does the tapestry of life look like? The answers lie hidden in the vast sheen of life that coats our world and every living being within. It will take a grand tour of this biosphere to uncover those secrets. Hello and welcome to the entire history of the Earth. As we approach the first anniversary of the creation of this channel, we'd like to thank you, the viewer, for joining us on this most epic of journeys. In 1936, a seven-year-old boy sat fishing in the meandering delta of the Alabama River. When an accidental flick and a tug damaged and blinded his right eye. The child suffered for hours but never complained. He knew that if the adults learned of his predicament, they would take him home, back to the city, away from the glorious countryside. Because this was where young Edward loved to be, immersed in nature. It was worth the pain in his one eye so that the other could witness the wonders of the natural world. Eventually, surgery would gift him his sight back, but it would never be quite as it had once been. With only 20/10 vision, he could no longer make out the sweeping landscapes and large animals that used to so fascinate him. But his love of nature was unshakable, and instead he turned his attention to the smaller creatures of the world. His good eye could pick out the hairs on the back of an ant's body, or the fine patterns on a butterfly's wing. In fact, this freak accident would help shape the young boy's life, setting him on the path to becoming a dedicated entomologist and a lover of all living things, both great and small. Edward O. Wilson grew up to be a world-renowned naturalist, author, philosopher, and today the world's leading authority on ants. These tiny, unassuming insects drew Wilson's attention like no other. Their diversity, social organization, and sheer tenacity in almost every part of the world is remarkable in itself. The ants are the most abundant insect on Earth. With more than 12,000 distinct species and perhaps as many as a quadrillion individuals. That's enough to outnumber us humans by about 1,000,000 to 1. Although each ant weighs just 4 milligrams, the total mass of ants on the planet is not far off the total mass of humans. Just a couple of hundred years ago, when our population was lower, the ants truly were the heavyweights of the animal world. A few thousand years before that, dwarfing humanity in scale. Considering ourselves as lesser animals in a world dominated by ants may be a hard pill to swallow, but even these diverse, numerous, and collectively weighty creatures are but a minor part of Earth's biological bounty. Understanding the true extent of Earth's biosphere is a Herculean task, and one that scientists are still grappling with today. Planetary science has given us the tools to describe a planet in intricate detail, from its inner core to its outermost boundary with space. The surface layers can be classified by their composition. The rocky lithosphere makes up the solid crust. The hydrosphere sees water cycled between the oceans, clouds, and rivers. And the atmosphere is a 500-kilometer thick gaseous blanket that swaddles, warms, and protects. Together, the composition and relative scale of these three components come to define any planet's surface conditions. But on Earth, at least, there is another component. Permeating the solid lithosphere, the liquid hydrosphere, and gaseous atmosphere is another sphere made of life itself. the biosphere. This living component of our planet covers and penetrates the solid surface of the land. It fills rivers, lakes, and oceans to the deepest, darkest depths, and even stretches many kilometers up into the atmosphere. The biosphere is a global ecosystem made up not just of living things, but also the non-living portions of our planet that are inextricably linked to life. Just as the hydrosphere is a continuous cycle of water between ice, oceans, and clouds, so too is the biosphere a continuous cycle of life. The cycling of carbon, nutrients, and raw energy through living things is what keeps us alive. Not only as individuals, but as a 4 billion year old ecosystem, and as a planet as a whole. The biosphere has been a critical component of the Earth since life first arose in the early Archean. That life had the same basic qualities of life today. It could self-sustain and self-replicate, sensing, moving, and responding to external stimuli. But in the intervening 4 billion years or so, the character of the biosphere has changed drastically. From isolated communities of microscopic cells and shallow pools and around deep ocean vents, Earth's life has gone from strength to strength. The modern biosphere is host to a staggering diversity of life forms, of seemingly limitless variety in shape, size, and lifestyle. There are the humans, of course, leaving our mark on the planet in the mighty civilizations we build and the resources we consume. But we are just one of many animals that call Earth our home. We are mammals, a group that includes the giant blue whale, the venomous duck-billed platypus, alongside all manner of hoofed, clawed, and even winged furry creatures. But mammals belong to a larger group of vertebrates, animals with a spine, that also includes the scaly reptiles, the feathered birds, water-bound fish, and amphibians that enjoy the best of the water and the land. Animals without spines, the invertebrates, are just as diverse and include the arthropods, which encompasses insects like the hugely numerous ants, plus arachnids and hard-shelled crustaceans. Mollusks may or may not have a hard protective shell around their fleshy body. They include creatures like clams, snails, and the dextrous octopus. Some invertebrates, like corals and sponges, build themselves scaffolds from inorganic materials, while other invertebrates embrace their spinelessness to become fluid-like creatures that rely on water, soil, or sand around them to keep their shape. They include a wide range of worms, jellyfish, and strange deep-sea creatures that seem to evade description altogether. The animal kingdom is breathtakingly diverse. It holds us in strange fascination as we see some form of our own consciousness mirrored in even the most bizarre tentacled body. But in sheer numbers and diversity, animals are dwarfed by another form. Plants can trace their origins back to the first photosynthesizing cell in Earth's early oceans. But, like the animals, they have improvised and diversified beyond all recognition. Today's biosphere is home to towering redwoods, vast expanses of grassland, lush rainforests and their vertical organization, and flowering plants specifically tailored to their pollinators' preference. There are plants adapted to every possible habitat and lifestyle on land, from the highest peaks to the driest deserts. They have evolved to survive drought, flood, fire, and barren cold. Through their ubiquity and their capacity for growth, despite the overwhelming population growth of humanity in recent centuries, plants still make up more than 80% of all the living mass on Earth. Of course, animals and plants are joined on the surface by yet another form of life. Perhaps the most mysterious of all, with roots hundreds of millions of years ago. Fungi. If the inner machinations of plants are difficult for us to understand, then the fungi are even more of an enigma. Mushrooms, yeasts, and molds exist as a mythical network that invisibly connects beneath the surface the living world. But for all their mystery, we know them to be a crucial component of Earth's biosphere. They are the key to the circle of life. Recycling dead creatures back to their component molecules for use by life once more. This macroscopic living world has been the subject of study and speculation for thousands of years. But when Antony van Leeuwenhoek first peered through his lenses in the 17th century, he opened a door to another hidden side of Earth's biosphere. The microscopic world. The denizens of this world may be tiny, but their collective might is huge. There are microscopic animals like rotifers and tardigrades, but other creatures consisting of only one cell cannot rightly be considered animal, plant, or fungus. Those single cells with a nucleus are the protists, which include predatory amoeba, as well as multitudinous forms of photosynthesizing algae, in shades of green, brown, and gold. Seaweeds, including the great kelp forests of the world's coastlines, are little more than a loose collection of these sun-loving single cells. But even the protists are outnumbered by an even smaller, even more numerous, and potentially more diverse group, the bacteria. These single cells lack a nucleus or other cellular machinery, but that hasn't stopped them from conquering the entire biosphere. Just a thousandth of a millimeter across, these hardy prokaryotic cells permeate every possible habitat on Earth. They've been found deep beneath ice sheets, clustering around acidic volcano pools, and floating high in the atmosphere. They are on and in our bodies in astounding number. It is a commonly voiced myth that bacterial cells outnumber our own body's cells some 10 to 1. While modern scientists have since revised that figure down to roughly 1 to 1, each of us still plays host to 30 trillion other living things. Despite their minuscule size, the sum total of bacterial biomass is some 1,000 times greater than that of all humans on Earth. As we go about our long lives, learning about the natural world and developing the tools and technology with which to understand it, it's easy for us human animals to consider ourselves masters of all. We undoubtedly have abilities no other living things possess, but elsewhere within the biosphere, other life forms have skills and natural talents of which we can only dream. We cannot harvest and carry 100 times our own weight like the industrious ants. We cannot make our own food from the raw energy of the sun like plants. We cannot eke out an existence in caustic pools of acid like the hardiest prokaryote. The diversity of Earth's modern biosphere is one of its greatest wonders, and we are but minor players in its spectacular chorus line. By every measure, we humans are outgunned and outnumbered. But at the same time, we are part of this vast interconnected web of life, able to trace our origins back some 4 billion years. And reconstructing the family tree of Earth's living world can help us find our true place within our planet's unique biosphere. For centuries, scholars have tried to understand our place within the natural world. In ancient Greece, Aristotle was among the first to speculate that animals were superior to the plants because of their ability to move and to sense and react to the outside world. Classical teachings like these persisted into the Middle Ages, when a more elaborate scheme of classification was developed that ranked all the matter and life that we were aware of as part of a great chain of being. At the pinnacle of this great chain was, of course, God, the creator of all, followed closely behind by the angels, and then man. Beneath mankind came the animals, with kingly animals like lions ranking above the lowly creatures that crawled across the sea floor. Then came the plants, also subdivided into superior flowering plants and inferior mushrooms and mosses. Finally, at the very bottom of the chain came the minerals, which possessed none of the vitality of life and yet still proved themselves of value through their strength and solidity. This strict linear classification is far removed from our modern understanding of the living world. But nevertheless, it was a worldview that persisted into the 19th century. It became the central canon for pseudosciences like alchemy, since the linking of all matter in a chain implied unity, and the theoretical possibility of transmutation up that chain to produce more kingly materials like gold and diamond. Early evolutionary scientists reasoned that this transmutation was also possible within living things. They believed that over time, living matter would transform to become more advanced and move up the great chain of being. This gave rise to the popular concept of a missing link. It may be theoretically possible for a mere animal to become a man, but that link in the chain is hidden from us, for now. But there was a light at the end of the tunnel for this seemingly unbreakable chain of existence. In the 18th century, a Swedish botanist named Carl Linnaeus proposed a new way of classifying life. He recognized the differences between animals, plants, and minerals, but placed them in separate, unrelated groups. These groups he named kingdoms, ultimately creating similar unranked subdivisions within them. They became classes, orders, genera, and species. Every living thing therefore belonged in a nested group of categories that had no place for concepts of biological superiority. Thus, for the first time, humans could be found within the kingdom of animals, the class of mammals, and the order of primates. Their unique classification as humans within the larger group of primates is given by their binomial name, Homo sapiens. During this great age of scientific discovery in the mid-1700s, Carl Linnaeus classified around 10,000 living things in this way, including 6,000 plants and around 4,000 animals. His meticulous organization laid the foundation for all modern biological classification, and the binomial nomenclature has found its way into common parlance with the likes of Tyrannosaurus rex and Escherichia coli, better known as the bacteria behind food poisoning, E. coli. Today, of course, we have abandoned the kingdom of minerals from biological classification systems. 3 centuries of scientific discovery have added other kingdoms alongside the plant and animals, recognizing their fundamental and irreconcilable differences. Fungi and protists each earn their own kingdom, and the inclusion of the prokaryotic bacteria bring the total to 5. But this isn't the full picture. Just as the last 3 centuries or so have brought new understanding of the macroscopic world, so the last few decades have changed our thinking on the microcosmos too. The physical differences between microscopic organisms may not be immediately obvious, but as scientists probe even further into their minute physiology and their genetic makeup, even the simplest prokaryotes seem to be remarkably diverse. Of the 1.5 million species that have been formally described, prokaryotes make up less than 1%. But scientists have good reason to believe that there are many, many more still waiting to be discovered. In 2012, about 1,400 new bacterial species, previously unknown to science, were discovered living in the belly buttons of university students. The most recent estimates suggest that the 4 other kingdoms of life, animals, plants, fungi, and protists, make up just 20% of all biodiversity. The rest, numbering some 1.5 billion species, is all bacteria. Not only that, but the divisions within the prokaryotes are wider than we could ever have imagined. Although they may look similar to our magnified eyes, there are in fact prokaryotes more distinct from one another than bacteria are from us. In 1977, a pair of American microbiologists, Carl Woese and George Fox, identified fundamental differences in the genetic structure of different types of simple prokaryotes. These differences were so deep-rooted that they warranted not just a new kingdom, but an entirely new level of classification. This revelation changed the Linnean dogma that had held sway for 300 years. The exotic prokaryotes that had caused such a stir became known as the archaea, and they define a domain of life, characterized by their distinctive genetic makeup. Archaean prokaryotes tend to live in extreme environments, like hot springs, intensely salty waters, and even inside petroleum deposits deep underground. Unlike their distant bacterial cousins, they never cause disease. With the recent discovery of the archaea, the new system of biological classification recognizes 2 other distinct domains: the true bacteria and the nucleus-bearing eukaryotes, which include the animals, plants, fungi, and protist kingdoms. Surprisingly, when geneticists reconstruct the tree of life, they find that we, as members of the eukaryotic domain, are more closely related to the extreme archaea than we are to the bacteria that live within our bodies. Tracing our origins back in time, scientists believe that the eukaryotic domain split from the archaea around 2 billion years ago, when the endosymbiotic associations between predatory prokaryotes and their internally enslaved prey became irreversible. But the split between bacterial and archaeal branches is almost twice as old, and may have occurred very soon after the origin of life itself. And so, we can picture the immense tree of life at 4 billion years old. Its colossal trunk meets the ground at a single point, but soon diverges into 2 massive branches, One, representing the bacteria, strikes out for the sun, but the other splits in two again. These become the archaeal and eukaryotic branches, and each splits time and time again into dense crowns that represent not only the huge diversity of life in Earth's modern biosphere, but every living being we know of that has ever existed. Today, Homo sapiens, as members of the primate order, the mammalian class, the vertebrate phylum, the animal kingdom, and the eukaryotic domain, sit at the top of this elaborate and incredibly complex tree. We may look down from the crown and consider ourselves masters of all, but in reality, we are merely a single leaf sharing the sunlight with billions of others. All species alive today can trace their heritage down through the vast tree of life to one of the three major branches, and then to its root. Ultimately, we have the 4 billion year long growth of this tree to thank for our tenuous place in the sun. You've been watching the entire history of the Earth. Don't forget to like and subscribe, let us know what you think in the comments, and we'll see you next time.